Theory and theology. All right, what is up? So tonight I've got another topic. Let me see what it even is, because I wrote some notes, but I've been writing a bunch of notes today and yesterday. I think I wrote these notes last night on Friday. It's Saturday now. Thanks for listening to the previous episodes about my random topics and the previous one about when I was trying to take photos for the flat earth pictures, or to see if I could capture good photos of the sun on the horizon. Unfortunately, today, even though we were supposed to have a bright sunset, clouds started setting in around like 2-3 p.m. and we started getting drizzling, slight rainy weather, very cloudy, foggy weather, and the weather changed enough that I didn't make it back to the beach tonight. So I couldn't capture the sundown. There would have been nothing to see anyways. But we did have like a bright sunny day, so I was hoping, but yeah, the weather just changed all of a sudden. So the topic for today, we're going to talk about this parable in the book of Mark, the parable of the sower in chapter 4. Now, take anything that is said, you know, don't take it as 100%. I ask more questions than I give answers. So I'm basically going to go by what Rabbi Tovia Singer talks about. I have debated over and over and over if I want to touch any of his content. I'm not here to mislead people or to make people go into some kind of spiral, or to make people turn things off because he is Jewish. Therefore, you know, he doesn't believe in Jesus or the New Testament. But he makes a lot of he provides a lot of educational information for people who are often curious about, you know, why don't Jews believe in Jesus? Like, because when you were raised Christian, you read the Bible a certain way, you see the Bible a certain way, and you're usually like, okay, well, I see this, what it says here, and how I've been taught to interpret it. So when Jews are reading this, why don't they see it? You know? Now, one thing I do like about Rabbi Tovia Singer is that he's not afraid to dive into the New Testament as well, and the history of the New Testament. But I'm not very schooled in like Greek. I can't really translate it. I rely on websites like that Blue Letter Bible website. Some of the stuff that he says, I can't really verify it because the translations from Hebrew or whatever still say the English translation that he says is a different term in Hebrew. And so the translation of some of the words that I've even seen him state, and then I've looked up, because he was like, oh, you know, the Christian Bible, because, you know, the Christians refer to the Bible as Old Testament and New Testament. The Jews refer to the Old Testament as Tanakh, Torah, Nevi'im, Ketuvim, the Torah, the first five books. Nevi'im means prophets. Ketuvim means writings. And they don't have a New Testament. The New Testament is something that Christians have. And they say New Testament, Old Testament. There's also a difference between the Old Testament that the Christians read in the Christian versions and translations of the Bible compared to the Tanakh that Jews read. Now, it's mostly similar. You'll see in some places the verses are a little off sometimes, especially in like Isaiah, I think Jeremiah. There's some books where there's like one note off, or like, sorry, one verse off, or like one chapter is like, it's always like staggered, like a verse or something by a certain point. Like maybe there's one verse added or one verse broken up. Now, there are modern Catholic Bibles that within my lifetime, I know even the Ten Commandments were changed. Like the fourth commandment, for example, is not the Sabbath commandment. They took two commandments and they broke it up, and there's no Sabbath commandment in those Bibles. So, you know, it seems like Christian Bibles, maybe they change more the translations. I mean, most, he does make a lot of good points in a lot of his teachings that, you know, most Christians aren't taught to read Greek or Hebrew. You don't learn that unless you're in like, unless you're like a theology major or you take some kind of elective in college or something at a usually religious school. Like, you're not just offered those kind of courses on like a regular basis. Even if you go to Christian schools as a kid, you usually don't learn a whole lot of the language. If anything, you'll learn Latin if you're at a Catholic school. But you usually don't learn Greek, you usually don't learn Hebrew. So when somebody's telling you, hey, these are translated wrong, hey, this word here is wrong, hey, that word there is wrong, it's like, how do you even refute that, you know? Because we read the Bibles that we read. A lot of people read King James, a lot of people read NIV. I'm a fan of the New Revised Standard Version. I don't know where my King James Bible went. My grandmother gave me one when I was a kid, and I thought I kept it, but I think I didn't, unfortunately. And then I bought a new an NIV because I wanted a Bible that had footnotes, that had the actual, like, you know, when there's some kind of quotes from the New Testament. When someone's talking about the Old Testament, that's the one thing I don't like about the Bible, the specific Bible that I have, the New Revised Standard Version, is that it doesn't have those, like, it won't say, like, oh, this is from Isaiah, or this is from, like, whatever. Like, I had an old Bible that said that, and then this one doesn't say that. It'll still have the footnotes, but it doesn't say, like, you know, like, say if Jesus quotes something or paraphrases something from one of the prophets, it doesn't lead you back to that text. And I kind of wanted that, because otherwise I'm just looking it up online all the time. But anyways, we're going to go over this lengthy study. I'm just looking at my notes to make sure. Alright, so I think I wrote them in order. I hope I don't go too much off topic. So let me just read it. I'm going to copy these and put these notes in the description. So this study, the question I asked is Christianity a Gnostic religion? Gnostic meaning needing secret knowledge in order to escape, in quotes, the broken world made by a broken God. That's kind of a quote by Rabbi Tovia Singer. And is Christianity not a sect of Judaism? So I know the one of the Jewish historians, modern Jewish historians that I like, is Henry Abramson. And he talked about Christianity and the early days of Christianity, how it was basically everyone was Jewish. there weren't secular Christians for the most part. At the beginning, it was mostly just Jewish people who believed in Jesus, and to some extent, who knows what they believed. They seemed to be questioning or seeming to think or wanting to know or believing that he is the Messiah or was the Messiah, or after his death they believed that, or during his life they believed that, or they questioned it, or they believed in like a miraculous birth, and there's like a lot of various things that people believed before, Rome got involved, and before, a lot of Gentiles got involved, and before all the pagan traditions got involved, and before Christianity started looking like it does today, where it doesn't look anything like Judaism. Like, the first Christians were Jews and they followed the Jewish religion, they followed the commandments, they read the Old Testament. In those times when Jesus was on earth, the New Testament was not even written. So they weren't following the New Testament because there wasn't one written till like after he died. I don't know the timeline, let's say 30 to 100 years or so after he died is when they started writing it, books started coming out. Now there might have been other books that got lost or damaged or something, but there were no books for like years, I believe at least decades after Jesus died. What we read in the New Testament is not what was existing at the time of Jesus, or even right at his crucifixion, or even right after his crucifixion. There were none of these books. So there was a time period where there were still Christians that were following Judaism even after the death of Jesus. There was no New Testament yet. And so that kind of history is something to take into consideration, because it's like, well, what were these people doing? They weren't doing what Christians in modern day do. They weren't going to church on Sundays. They weren't doing non-Jewish things that the Torah would have said don't do. They weren't doing those traditional things that, a lot of people do. Maybe they did different things, like maybe they took a form of communion. 'Cause in the Jewish synagogue, even today, when you go, they have the kiddush, and there's bread and wine, I believe, at the end of the service. But they don't say like, "This is my blood," or "This is my body," which was broken, or "This is my blood," "Do this in remembrance of me." There's none of that. Jesus said that on his own. The Jews don't do that. They say something else. They don't have that symbolism attached to it. But Jesus is the one who started that, and the Christian church, took it on, doing it as often. It says do it often, So anyways, those are my questions. This topic was opened by Will Liam Hall's show called, it's spelled TENAK Talk, TENAK Talk, but his website is Tanakh Talk, TANACHTALK.com. And Rabbi Tovia Singer is kind of responding to this question about Mark chapter 4, about the parable. And Rabbi Tovia Singer's website is outreachjudaism.org. So, since this is probably my first time talking about Rabbi Tovia Singer, he basically caters towards Jews that are in other religions, and primarily with Christian missionaries, he debunks and tries to disprove a lot of what Jews are, according to him and other Jews. They would say that they're being misled by these missionaries and Christians that are working so hard to kind of take Jews out of the Jewish faith, and he's giving reasons online why, you know, the New Testament information has inaccuracies and things like that. So I put the link to this video where the question is asked by one of the callers. It's read by Will Liam Hall, and Rabbi Tovia Singer is the rabbi who answers the question. So Rabbi Tovia Singer stated that Christianity is not a sect of Judaism, but is instead a religion of Gnosticism. So as I understand, Gnosticism comes from India. And what it is, like I mentioned in the beginning, you know, it's a type of religion where you need secret knowledge in order to kind of escape from the current type of world that's going on. So we'll get to that secret knowledge part. But, you know, he also stated that Christianity does not properly address prophetic texts. Oftentimes, you know, Christians talk about Isaiah chapter 53 as being a prophetic text that is supposed to be proof that Jesus is the Messiah. Also, Jeremiah 31 is verse 33 in the Jewish Bible, is verse 34 in the Christian Bible, because Judaism sees the Messiah differently. And so when Christians read Isaiah 53 or in the Christian Bible Jeremiah 31:34, they read it saying, look, you know, this shows that Jesus is the Messiah. Now, in a previous episode, I posted from the website Safaria, there's a lot of complex writings by Maimonides posted on there, and it gives information about the Messiah. Now, I don't think that's an extensive amount of information. I don't think that's all that there is in writings outside of the Bible. I'm pretty sure there's a lot more. Just that one, you know, I'm learning, and, you know, the Jewish person who was talking in one of the arguments in this whole different situation, he was explaining the text that he was reading, and it took me ages to, like, look it up online and figure out where it was and find it, so I can actually post the link. So you can refer back to that episode. I think I labeled it like Jesus versus, I don't know, one of the Chabad rabbis, the Lubavitch Rebbe or Chabad Rebbe or something like that. Because a lot of Jews think that guy, even though he did pass away, unfortunately, that guy could have been the Messiah, because he, according to them, meets the criteria more than what Jesus did, according to their interpretation of what Maimonides wrote in those texts. All right, so Mark chapter 4 is the parable of the sower. You can read it yourself. My question about it, I have random questions, okay? One first question that kind of came to my mind was that, you know, I guess, so Mark chapter 4 verses 1 through 9 is the story. Mark chapter 4 verses 10 through 20, Jesus provides the explanation of why he talks in parables. And so my question at the parable was, why does the sower of the word, because Jesus is the one that explains that, you know, the person sowing the seed is sowing the word, Why does this person seem to just sow the seeds anywhere, right? Like, if you think of it visually, I mean, I'm into studying Amish culture, as you know. If you've been on here, you've probably heard me talking about it. Now, there's not like a live stream of like Amish people just like working on their farms, or they don't all have farms, but you know, and I live in LA, there's not like local farms or anything. My parents are really into gardening. Like, I know a little bit about it, you know. And I would say, you know, people till the ground, they make rows, right? And when they sow seeds, they do it very strategically, right? Depending. I mean, maybe if you're growing grass, you're not gonna be like poking a hole and putting the seed and placing soil over it and putting water. You're not gonna be like individually like doing it, right? If you're planting like grass or something that's gonna sprout everywhere, you might be a little more generous and, you know, less like strategic about like rows and things like that. You're gonna just like scatter it around, right? But most times, I mean, think of it. If you're planting pumpkin seeds, you're not just gonna throw it all over the place. You know, in our backyard, we have some kind of concrete mixed with rock on a patio right by the sliding door. We have soil, between the house and like a walking path. We have concrete, and on the other side of that concrete, we have soil, and then we have a terrace that goes up a hill, right? Now, if we were gonna plant anything, roses, you know, you're not just gonna take rose seeds and just throw them all over the yard. Some of them are gonna land like near the door, like on the, you know, on the concrete. You know, some of them are gonna land in this like mixed rocky concrete. You know, you put them in beds, you put them in small pots, you know, you take care of them, right? Same with pumpkins. If you're growing pumpkins, you're not just gonna be throwing your seeds all over the freaking place. The whole point is to, you know, reap something from what you sow, right? But if you're taking your seeds and you're wasting them, you can't expect for it to grow in certain places. Now, like I'm saying, if you were trying to grow grass, that's different. You might just throw it all over the yard. But you would throw it in places where there's soil. You wouldn't throw it, you know, on a rocky path or on concrete or whatever. Unless you just, I don't know why someone would do that, other than planting grass or some kind of wheat or something like that. Like, I don't know why anybody would plant anything that way. Like, usually, if you're growing corn, if you're growing, you know, any kind of greens, if you're growing vegetables, if you're growing fruits, you're very strategic. You plant things in rows. You plant them a certain distance apart. You put like one or two, couple little seeds in one spot. You put them in certain places, or sometimes you even grow them in like pots, or you grow them maybe even indoors someplace a little bit, so they sp you grow some sprouts. Like, you're very strategic, right? Now, so I've never seen, even as a city person, I've never known of anybody to sow seeds that way. Just like throw them all over and see what the heck happens. You know? I don't know why anybody would think to do that, you know? Even if they didn't know what they were doing, I don't know why they would think to do that. So that already stuck out to me. Like, visually, I'm like, well, why is this sower throwing seeds? Some of them are landing on the path, and some of them are landing on this other thing, you know, and all this kind of stuff. So that already was like a big question mark. Like, what is going on here? And Jesus provides this example and this explanation that, you know, the seeds that get taken from that, from the path, the ones that don't get like actually planted, you know, don't, you know, basically a bird comes and takes them, right? And in my head, I'm like, okay, yeah, the bird comes and takes him. The bird represents Satan. But then I'm like, in my head, I'm like, well, doesn't that get processed? That gets processed, right? Like, it gets processed. The food gets processed. Like, the bird eats the seed, takes the seed, flies away, and eventually, not to be rude about it, but poops it out somewhere else. And because it's fertilized in the poop, it's probably gonna grow if it lands in the right spot, right? But the sower is not gonna yield any profit out of that. And this sower doesn't seem like they really care if they're gonna yield profit. They're not being very strategic about it. They're just throwing seeds all over the place. So maybe I'm looking at this wrong. You know, I'm not a scholar, you know, but this is what my brain is like. What is going on here? It's weird. It's an odd story. Because even like visually, you're like, okay, like nobody, if you even have a small garden, you're not gonna garden like that. You know, if you're growing potatoes, you're not just gonna throw seeds all over the place. If you're growing carrots, you're not just gonna like, I mean, I don't know if potatoes have seeds. They don't have seeds, do they? Don't you just like, I don't know. It just shows how much I don't know. But I don't know, guys. Anyways, so in Mark chapter 4, verses 10 to 20, Jesus states that he provides the parables to non-disciples, and the whole point of this person calling in is questioning this portion where Jesus says, you know, they will not perceive, not understand. That is the part that's weird, because it's like, why would somebody provide information to people so that they won't understand it or understand what's going on? And he says he provides the information to the disciples, and I guess those other people who were like there at the end, like after the whole event. So I put my thoughts and my questions in this. So that was a thought. The one that I talked about was Satan with the seed, taking the seed, Satan as the bird taking the seed away. It seems like maybe the ultimate focus is to see where the profit is going to come from. What yield is potentially going to happen. But I think as a sower, you would assume, you know, if you plant it in the soil, you're going to be more likely to get more profit out of that, more yield, more growth out of that. But there's also, you know, my question was, is the sower of the word giving a potential opportunity even when there's not ideal soil there? Just like throw it, see what happens. Because even if a bird does take it and eat it and sow it somewhere else, it could still land in the right place, even though it initially landed in the wrong place, right? So there's still potential, you know. But anyways, it goes into, you know, this paraphrase of Isaiah chapter 6, verses 9 through 10. That's what Jesus paraphrased in Mark, supposedly talking about not perceiving and not understanding. And then this is where I get more confused, you know, because I don't fully understand, you know, how prophets, how prophets get taken. Like, how, I guess, how do I word this? How do prophets get taken? Like, how can someone tell if someone's quoting a prophet? Because I notice whenever there's quotes in the New Testament, it's never word for word. Even though you would assume if they're translating from the same thing, it would consistently say the same thing. So when you actually see what's written in Mark and then you see what's written in Isaiah, it's not word for word, and it's never word for word. Whenever I see those, someone's talking from the prophets or quoting or whatever, it's never word for word. So I always wonder, why is it never word for word? And I also always wonder, when it comes to the prophets in general, how do they get taken as prophets? Because if nobody told me that this was some kind of prophetic saying, just reading Isaiah alone, if I was just reading that, I would not assume anything. Like, the passage in Isaiah, what's before it and what's after it doesn't like scream, oh, this is like a prophecy. It just seems like part of a story. There's always a story on top of it that's being told about these like kings and their nations and all this other kind of stuff. I can't tell if it's a prophecy. Now, a lot of Isaiah does say, like, this is an oracle, this is an oracle, that's an oracle. The oracle to this person, or oracle of this person, or whatever. It says that a lot. But I guess the point that Rabbi Tovia Singer was trying to make was that this is his argument for saying that Christianity is a Gnostic religion, that you need secret knowledge in order to kind of escape the world, the evil world as it is. So for example, Jesus has these parables that he gives, and unless you're one of his disciples or the people who stay after with the disciples, you're not going to get that explanation revealed to you. All the people he spoke to when he was sitting in the boat in the water, they got the parable, but they didn't get the exact explanation of like what is happening. There's a sower. What are they sowing? They're sowing the word. Who is the bird? The bird is Satan. The seed, gets dropped there, it gets taken, or it doesn't grow, or it does grow and it yields. None of that's being explained in detail to the rest of the people. But could you come to that conclusion without an explanation? Because not all the parables have an explanation. But I think in Christianity, we get informed of an explanation that's a traditional explanation. And sometimes, like the questions I just had, I'm like, I never heard anybody in a church talk about any of this stuff. Like, I just mentioned it. Even though I grew up in a church and went to church all the time, and this parable did come up a lot. We talked a lot about parables. We had like series of sermons based on parables, series of lessons based on parables, And there was always the same conclusion without any variation of information that would ever really seem to come from it. And how do you even know if you got it right? Like, if Jesus isn't there saying like, hey, this is what it means, you're basically at the mercy of whatever your pastor or Sabbath school teacher or whoever tells you, this is what it says, therefore this is what it means, and then you're just like, oh, okay. Because usually when someone gives you an explanation, you can kind of see it. You're like, okay, that makes sense. And, for Rabbi Tovia Singer to say that, Jesus is mentioning that he's like making it hard for people to perceive it or understand it. I think it says, lest they turn away and be saved or repent or something like that. Whatever it says in there, don't take my quotes. Read it yourself. But I don't know. Like, it's just a it's interesting. I don't know what to make of it. I don't know if Christianity is a Gnostic religion for sure. I would say so as far as needing secret knowledge, I don't really know if there's a lot of that, like, secret knowledge. It seems like, I guess I would say Jesus' style, he kind of answers a lot of questions with other questions or other statements that sometimes don't seem directly related. Like, a lot of times I do have a difficult time if it's like somebody asks him a question and then his answer is never like straightforward. Like, if he's like, well, why are your disciples picking grain on the Sabbath? They're breaking the Sabbath. Why are they picking grain? And his response isn't, they're not breaking the Sabbath. You know, he gives some response that usually seems a little out there. But it does seem like he's, how do I say this? Other than the parables, it seems like his responses usually to the Pharisees, the scribes, all these other people that are talking to him all the time, he seems to refer to Jewish thought. He seems to refer not to the traditions necessarily, but he refers to these arguments in Judaism. Like, which is better, to do this or to do that? You know? Or should I have said this? Should I have not healed this person on the Sabbath? Should I have done this or should I have, you know, done that? You know? And he's referring to things that I think a lot of times Christians, I mean, what I'm gathering as I'm diving a little more into all this oral Torah information is that a lot of the stuff that Jesus says isn't stuff that Christians are given knowledge of. Like, just reading the Old Testament as a Christian, you're not always gonna have those Jewish arguments, you know. Now, the Talmud is a commentary on the Mishnah, right? But you know, the Talmud was written after Jesus was on earth. It was written kind of nearby the time period where some of the New Testament was being written. So a lot of Jews know it, and they would argue it, and they would talk about it, and they would study it, but you know, it was more like the commentary of all these compiled people, this compiled information that was, you know, interpreting or giving different scenarios or reasoning or information behind what the commandment said. So whenever in the New Testament somebody's saying to Jesus, you know, you're breaking the commandments, or somebody in your crew, your disciples, they're breaking the commandments. That was always the concern because the Jews were concerned about the commandments. They still are. Christians don't seem very concerned with the commandments because of their interpretation that they shouldn't keep the commandments or that they've been done away with, even though there's a lot of argument on the other side of that, you know, the commandments do exist still, and that they should be kept still. I'm not gonna get into that kind of an argument. That's for each person to kind of figure on their own. But that's kind of maybe my explanation. I don't know what you guys think, but that's kind of my explanation. The parables, I don't know where they come from. I don't have any like historical basis for the parables. I don't really know if they're relevant to any other kind of scripture or any other kind of tradition. That's the part of what Jesus says that I'm not, certain of. But I do know that rabbis have a midrash. And their midrash is kind of their own interpretation or argument or tradition or method that whoever follows that rabbi follows their midrash. And so his disciples were following his midrash. And his midrash was backed up by his explanations, usually about why he could heal on the Sabbath or why they could pick grain on the Sabbath or, other traditions that he would talk about, like, why don't you, like he, I know he mentioned before to, like, I think it was to some Pharisees or scribes or someone where he was saying, like, you'll give at the temple, but if you have parents that are like in need, you won't help them financially, but you'll give at the temple. You'll give money, but you won't help your own immediate family. Now, strangely, I haven't been reading this book that I've been reading for a really long time. It's pretty dense. To me, it's dense because a lot of it's new, but it's called, I have it buried under some other books here. It's called Mishnah and the Words of Jesus by Dr. Roy B. Blizzard. And the first part of it talks about tzedakah. Which is giving. And they talk about these different types of giving called tzedakah. And the different types, there's types of giving where you can give and the person giving knows who they're giving the money to. The person, there's a type where you can give and you as the giver don't know who you're giving the money to. There's a type where you can give and you don't know who you're giving the money to, and the person who's getting it doesn't know who it's from. I think that's the most, that's the highest kind of giving. But then you also notice, if you look at a lot of Jewish culture, you'll see that there's always these sponsors. There's always people sponsoring something. This person sponsored the Kiddush meal or whatever. This person sponsored, this Passover Seder. This person sponsored, this lecture. This person sponsored, whatever it is that's going on in the yearly calendar, whether it's holy days, holidays, events, wedding related things, whatever it is, somebody's sponsoring something. Even when I watch that guy who does the Daf Yomi, that Talmud, teaching online every day. I don't watch him every day at all, but he teaches online every day. Even when I watch him, at the very beginning, I mean, there's people who sponsor that YouTube channel or that meeting where they're all meeting there in that room. Maybe if there's a place that needs to be rented out or whatever it is, there's people sponsoring all the stuff. And that's a form of a type of giving, that is a common traditional thing. In Christianity, that's not like a thing. You don't really see a lot of giving to sponsor a bunch of stuff like you do, but it's not like built into the traditions. So, you know, even when Jesus talks about like the giving at the temple, it's like that still goes on. It's like people still give, you know, but he's saying like, you know, yeah, take care of your family. And that's part of it too, is, you know, take care of your family, your neighbors. You know, it's not always like sending money overseas to like strangers or whatever. But anyways, I don't know. I don't even know if I was fully on topic, but what do you guys think? Is Christianity a Gnostic religion? I don't think that the point was made here just by Mark chapter 4, by looking at one parable. Because I do feel like there's other information outside of parables where Jesus responds, and a lot of that is taken from like the Mishnah and other traditions. It's not taken from, you know, some kind of secret knowledge. It's a common form of discussion and debate, you know, to like talk with various opinions and backing up using different Jewish texts to argue a point, saying this rabbi had this midrash, that rabbi had that midrash. And the Mishnah is, I feel like I'm getting this wrong. So the Mishnah is the oral Torah. The Mishnah is, the explanation of the details of what a commandment says. So if a commandment says something specific to do, you know, I mean, from a Christian perspective, when you read like in Leviticus and all these other places where there's all these commandments about what to do in the temple and like how to sacrifice this or that, or why you would choose a bull versus a lamb versus a pigeon versus a dove versus, you know, the rules seem really like a lot. But there's a lot more specificity to that as well with the Mishnah. And then there's a lot more specificity to the Mishnah with the Talmud. And so, you know, Christians miss out on all of that. But in another, you know, episode where Rabbi Tovia Singer is talking to some other Christians, he does kind of mention, you know, Christians do kind of come into things where the Talmud kind of backs it up, even though they don't really know. They're kind of like following stuff that it's kind of still there. Christianity kind of still touches on things that the Talmud and the Mishnah touch on, even though Christians aren't like usually reading anything about it at all, almost ever. You know, so that's a lot of various information. I'm gonna put the notes in the description of kind of what we're talking about here. I don't know, with this specific example, I don't think that Rabbi Tovia Singer is too accurate in saying that, you know, Christianity is a Gnostic religion. But I do see a lot, I have heard of a lot about Gnosticism. I never really knew what it meant. I don't know if I have a problem with it. Like, Because it's like, if you don't know something, sometimes you don't even know what you don't know, right? It's like, so how are you even losing out if you don't even know? Like, if somebody told me a parable and I'm like, okay, I don't hear anybody explaining this, and that's how they describe it, I would assume, okay, this is what it means. Maybe I'd talk about it amongst other people, maybe not. But if I didn't know that there was going to be some secret explanation after the meeting, after the speech, after the teaching, where the disciples and a few other people were hanging out, if I was there in that time period and I didn't know that that was an option to hang around, you know, and you'll be one of the special few who gets the actual secrets answered in detail by Jesus with his explanation of what it means. Because he's only revealing it to those people who were there. I mean, can you be penalized if you don't know? I mean, how are you supposed to figure it out, you know? But I'm very curious about the parables, if they do have any other kind of like Jewish basis. That's not something that I'm too aware of. I'm really not aware of that. I've never heard of that before. But I would be open to knowing about it. But I do have plenty of other topics where I've been taking notes on what Rabbi Tovia Singer says. You know, I started out trying to listen to this guy and I was like, I don't like him. Not as a person. I wouldn't say I don't like him as a person. That's not what I'm saying because I don't know the guy. But I don't know. I think, you know, Christianity is so far from Judaism, even though in the eyes of Christianity, it's like, why aren't Jews seeing this? You know, but the way that Jews interpret things, because they come from the original language of reading it, you know, things might not even say the same thing, you know. Or if they do say something, you know, they don't interpret it that way. Or Christians are taught to interpret it a certain way. But they don't have any other way of looking at it. There's no other angle to come from. Because we also, you know, those of us raised in Christianity also don't tend to have a tradition of religious discussion. I've talked about this before. There's this synagogue online that I've followed at times. I've watched it, you know, some Sabbath mornings I've watched it. And they just have a full-on discussion. You know, it's like they're talking about that week's Torah portion, whatever the portion is for the day that's going to be discussed on Sabbath. And people can go around and give their explanation. That doesn't happen in a church. You know, sometimes it might, but it doesn't happen like that, where people can just give their explanation. And then there's no like debate or argument about it, and people just kind of move on. You know, it's not like the person up front has all the information. So, to that extent, I would say yes. You know, in Christianity, there is that whole the people who are learned, who go to school, who get the degree, and become your pastor, they're the ones who have all this knowledge. And even though most of us are reading in English, or whatever our native language is, because a lot of the Bibles are in our native languages, we weren't taught all that other stuff. They were, though. They were taught all this other stuff. And I've had experience asking pastors some of these other questions that I had, and I was never able to get answers. And I would study it for myself, and I'd be like, why is some of this stuff in here? You know, and they would never give an answer where I was like, I think. Like, I would ask them things like, well, you know, as an Adventist church, why do we keep the Sabbath, but we don't keep any of the other, like, we don't keep Passover, We don't keep, any of these other days, any of these other holy days, Yom Kippur, Rosh Hashanah. You don't see us, even talking about them, even the ones that are commandments to keep for all time. It's like, I would understand maybe other denominations not following those because, they're not even taught much about keeping the Jewish Sabbath. But it's like, if you're going to keep the Jewish Sabbath, but you don't keep the other Jewish holidays, but you keep Easter and Christmas, I don't know, and nobody even responded. And it's things like that where I was like, I felt like I knew the answer, but they just didn't want to say it. And I don't know, to me that was a turnoff. But I'm gonna dive more into different topics. I'll see how you guys respond to this one. I'm gonna have a hard time talking about this guy. Or about the stuff that this guy says. Just because of how I was raised, that's all. But I hope it's enjoyable. Thank you.